Everybody follows somebody. Everybody follows somebody. But deciding who to follow is not always easy for us. You may know this from experience. Perhaps you've recently opened up a Twitter account or some other social media account, and the next thing you have to do is figure out who to follow. Which personalities and opinions to add to your newsfeed? Should it be celebrities? Should it be apologists? Should it be comedians? Should it be social commentators? We are, frankly, overwhelmed with choices of who to follow. As a result, some of us choose to follow people merely for entertainment value. Will you entertain me? If you will, I'll follow you. We amuse ourselves with the latest post of political mudslingings. We have a laugh at the satirical content of Babylon Bee. We get our dopamine fix through Jordan Peterson or Papa Elon. That is to say, even if we're just in it for entertainment value, people follow other people. Following people has become exceedingly easy for us today. But I also want you to remember, for some people, following others, entrusting ourselves, which is what it is to follow someone, to entrust ourselves to the voice of someone else, have been a harmful part of our experience. Perhaps it was an unwise religious voice who put you wrong in your relationship with God, and they distorted your view of the Christian life. Perhaps it was a poor piece of financial advice you were given. Perhaps it was a close friend who preyed on your innocence. That is to say, there are some of us who have grown hesitant about this idea that we are to follow someone. We tried once, and we were bruised, and we don't think we can do it again. This reminds me a little bit of an old Greek myth of King Odysseus and the sirens. The sirens are depicted as creatures who lured men to their deaths through their enchanting voices. The fable goes something like this. "Come to us," the sirens sang, "and we'll tell you a secret for you alone." The creature sat high on the treacherous rock, shimmering strangely in the pale dawn light. Odysseus gazed at them from his ship, squinting against the dazzling glare. He longed to go closer, but he knew he shouldn't. Everyone knew the stories of sailors being lured to their death by the sirens. And Odysseus was no fool. Before they got to where the sirens lived, he asked his crew to plug their ears with beeswax so they couldn't hear a thing. He had also asked them to tie him to the mast. Odysseus knew better than to trust the voices of the sirens. He rightly feared their deviled voices, and so it is for some of us. We imagine there are deviled voices all around us. Everyone is in it to get one over on us. And so the idea of following someone makes us hesitant. No doubt then, there are various angles we bring to this discussion about following someone. But I will suggest to you, even if it's for entertainment value, or even if you're hesitant, we all follow somebody. We all follow somebody. We all follow some outlet, some voice, either internal or external to us, some personality, some group, more than others. And that kind of devotion, that kind of following of someone else, inevitably shapes us. Following someone shapes us. Whom we follow with the greatest affection forms our views, our intuitions, our stance towards life and reality. That is what following someone does. And in the midst of these overwhelming options that we have available to us of people and voices to follow, all of them angling to shape our views, our intuitions, our stance towards life and reality, I'm asking you to consider one more voice. I'm asking you to consider one more option. The life and voice of Jesus. Jesus too invites his disciples to follow him. Take a look at verse 18. While walking by the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And Jesus said to them, "Follow me. Follow me." Now, for those of us who like to follow people because we think it's entertaining to do so, we might look at this invitation and think, yeah, sure, I'll give this a go. This could be another fun dopamine fix for me. To those of us who are hesitant or distrusting, we might be thinking, not yet. Not yet. I need time to figure out if following Jesus is even a wise thing to do. Either way, I want to challenge you gently that both responses, if we're following Jesus because we're looking for him to entertain us, or if we're holding Jesus at arm's length, they're both inadequate responses to Jesus. Neither of them really get it. I'll explain why in a minute, but I firstly want to mine the text for a couple of exegetical details that we need to get to grips with. Now, firstly, when Jesus showed up to the location where these brothers were fishing and invited them to follow him, it is quite possible that these fishermen had heard of Jesus and may have even heard some of his teaching before this point in time. But even so, they would have only heard snippets, right? They would have had casual contact with Jesus. They may have seen him in a market square somewhere. They may have seen him in the synagogue at one time. But they would have only possessed limited knowledge of Jesus. And this is often the case with discipleship, both in biblical times and our own. We often become disciples of Jesus, not because we have a complete or even a comprehensive knowledge of all that he taught and all the accompanying theology of the scriptures. No, we have to make a start. And we often have to make a start while there are still many blanks for us to fill out in the future. In this way, we agree with the 11th century Christian monk, a man named Anselm. He coined the phrase faith seeking understanding. Faith seeking understanding. That is, Christian faith sets us on a lifetime quest. It is an all of life quest to know and understand God more fully. But that quest has to begin somewhere. It has to begin somewhere, right? And usually it begins with a limited knowledge in the hope of growing, maturing, and deepening our understanding over time. We all have to make a start on the big quest. And you may have to start with baby steps, is all I'm trying to say. Now also notice, Jesus is supremely confident that he is to be followed. Jesus is supremely confident that he is the one to be followed. Think about this. These early disciples could have followed any other rabbi of their time, and there were many. They could have followed many other religious leaders and teachers. Alternatively, they could have thrown in the towel with Judaism and followed the Roman customs instead. All I'm saying is, like us, these disciples had options of who to follow. They could have filled their news feed with other voices than Jesus's. But along comes Jesus, and he calmly and he confidently says, "Follow me. Follow me." It takes a certain amount of confidence and self-assurance, don't you think, to ask people to follow you. You have to be a pretty steady in yourself to ask people to follow you, right? And here's what's interesting. This is not even just an isolated incident from Jesus. This is not an isolated invitation from Jesus to follow him. Jesus makes this statement all over Matthew's gospel. Matthew 8:22, to one potential disciple, Jesus said, follow me, and leave the dead to bury their own dead. Matthew 9:9, to a tax collector named Matthew, who we attached this gospel account to, Jesus said to him, follow me. At another time, Jesus explained, whoever does not take up his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Matthew 16:24, and again, Jesus told his disciples, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. 19:21, lastly, Jesus said to the very wealthy individual considering discipleship, Jesus said to him, if you would be perfect, go and sell what you possess and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. And come, follow me. Following Jesus, it seems, is fundamental to Christian life. Following Jesus seems fundamental to Christian life. But because there is cultural ambiguity in our day about what it means to be a Christian, we could probably clarify that a little further, and we could say something like intentionally following Jesus is fundamental to being a Christian. Intentionally following Jesus is fundamental to being a Christian. You know, that clarification, it's a simple word like intentionality, does spare us a lot of heartache, doesn't it? After all, if we look at the number of people who self-identify as Christian on our national census, I'm just highly doubtful that number is accurate. Aren't you? Aren't you suspicious of the census numbers of people who identify themselves as Christian and you look at the shape of society around you? It would seem many people has this idea that we can identify as Christian without being intentional about following Jesus. It seems to me a lot of people have that idea. This is what we might call cultural Christianity or nominal Christianity. It is a Christianity which lacks spiritual vibrancy, which often includes this intentional following of Jesus. So let's just clear up that misconception then. When Jesus invites us to follow him, he has in mind an intentional way of life. It is an intentional following that has to take place, one which gives significant attention to Jesus' life and teaching, so much so that it is his life and teachings which begin to shape our own views, our intuitions, our stance towards life and reality. That is what we mean by the phrase following someone, don't we? That is what it means to follow someone. They begin to shape you. They begin to shape your views about life and reality. They influence you. Literally, that phrase, follow me, means to come behind me, to fall in line behind me. To put it slightly differently, Jesus invites his disciples to become his trainees, to become his apprentices. And it's worth thinking about if we're going to identify ourselves as Christians, isn't it? What does Jesus' invitation to follow me mean to you? How significantly does that phrase impact your life? How intentionally is Jesus' life and teaching shaping your views? How intentionally are Jesus' life and teachings shaping your intuitions, your stance towards life and reality? That's a question worth asking, I think. Then as we continue to move through the text, we see that along with Jesus' invitation to a life of discipleship, this life of apprenticing with Jesus, Jesus also offers to teach us, to educate us in our apprenticeship with him. So there's this invitation by Jesus to follow me, but then he also offers us an education. What will that following me look like? What will it produce? Take a look at verse 19. Jesus said to them, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. Follow me, that's the invitation, and I will teach you to be fishers of men. Some of us don't like the sound of this at all. We don't like the sound of where Jesus is taking this conversation. You're already a bit nervous that Christianity is prone to cultish distortions. The last thing you want is to be caught like a fish in a dodgy church outfit. And I appreciate this. I do. I appreciate that sentiment. I, for one, do not want to be part of a Christian outfit that seems sneaky, underhanded, and whisper among themselves about catching people like prey. That sounds cruel to be hunted, doesn't it? But what if this is not Jesus' meaning when he says, I will make you fishers of men? What if Jesus is not actually suggesting baiting and hooking people through an act of deceit, but rather to gather and persuade people with openness and transparency? I think this is more in line with Jesus' intent here. This week, as I was researching and searching through the commentaries to understand how the phrase fishers of men was used in the ancient culture, I was helped by a commentary by Warren Wiersbe, and he suggested the following. He suggested the term fishers of men was not new to Jesus. This was a common phrase. For centuries, Greek and Roman philosophers had used it to describe the work of a man who would seek to catch others by teaching and persuasion. Teaching and persuasion. And that is that fishing and catching people was not done deviously. It's not a devious act with a bit of bait disguising a deadly hook. The task was done openly and reasonably. Openly and reasonably. That's the kind of fishing we're talking about. And I'm thinking this is what Jesus offers to teach his disciples. And I think this because many of the New Testament commands given by Jesus' disciples indicate how they intended to be fishers of men, how they instructed their churches to become fishers of men. And it wasn't devious, it wasn't underhanded. It was open. It was reasonable. For instance, Paul teaches, let your reasonableness be known to everyone. Jude teaches us this beauty. Have mercy on those who doubt. P. Peter teaches us, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you. Yet, when you're being a fisher of men, when you are giving that defense of your Christian faith, do it with gentleness and respect. It seems to me, it would just seem, wouldn't it, that Jesus' earliest disciples learned that trapping people with underhanded and deceptive practices were totally unwelcome in Christian evangelism, completely out of place with what the Christian church endeavors to teach. So could it not be then that Jesus would also teach us to be fishers of men, persuading them with reasonableness, inviting with gentleness and respect, and being merciful when people push back against the invitation to follow Jesus? I think so. I think it's worth paying attention to the ways in which Jesus would teach us to become fishers of men. Don't you? Don't you think it's worth paying attention to the way in which it's to be done? It's also worth thinking for a moment about the Christian impulse to be evangelistic, to be fishers of men, our desire to see people come to be intentional followers of Jesus. Why are we motivated to do that? What is the impulse behind all of that? You see, the idea of fishing for people, to gather people for God, is an Old Testament idea. It's got an Old Testament root to it. And as the Old Testament people of God faced exile because of their rebellion against God, that's the church of the Old Testament, Jeremiah said to God, God would fish them back out of exile. Jeremiah, one of their own prophets, said that God is going to come and fish you back out of exile. He says through Jeremiah, "Behold, I am sending many fishers, declares the Lord, and they shall catch them." That is the exiles. I don't think it's a stretch to see the similarity between the language of Jeremiah and Jesus here at all. It is not a stretch to see a similarity here, an echo of what Jeremiah spoke of in the words of Jesus. And here's why. In both instances, in Jeremiah, as with Jesus, the image of fishing, the act of gathering people, was God's initiative to bring his scattered people back to himself. The image is God retrieving his people, bringing them back. And so it remains. When Christians talk about evangelizing and making disciples who follow Jesus into an intentional obedience, the central impulse is to bring people back. That's why we bother sending missionaries overseas. That's why we bother telling our friends and neighbors about Jesus. Because we want to see people gathered back to God. We want to teach and persuade that having God's exiled judgment hang over us is deserved and warranted. That much is true. It was for Jeremiah, and it certainly is true for us. Jeremiah spoke of fishers, but he reminded everyone about God, who says, "For my eyes are on all their ways. They are not hidden from me, nor is their iniquity concealed from my eyes. But first I will doubly repay their iniquity and their sin, because they have polluted my land with the carcasses of their detestable idols and have filled my inheritance with their abominations." But that's not the totality of Jeremiah's message to the exiles. That's not it. That's not the full message, nor is it the Christian gospel. These sins, the detestable things that we've done, can be dealt with. That's what Jeremiah is teaching the exiles. The detestable things can be dealt with. Our sins can be forgiven. As Jeremiah also said to those who put their hope in God, as the Lord lives, who brought up the people of Israel out of the north country and out of all the countries where he had driven them, for I will bring them back. I will bring them back. That is what the gospel signifies. It is God bringing his people back. This is the promise of salvation. This is God regathering his people to himself. This is the great impulse behind Christian mission and evangelism. We just love to see intentional disciples with a heart to disciple others back to God also. This is what it means to be educated by Jesus, to be taught by Jesus, to be fishers of men. And if so, I think it sounds a lot more dignified and hopeful than the image of being trapped and captured by a cult. No, when Christians talk about fishing for people, to be fished is to be drawn in and to be gathered to God for the purpose of receiving his salvation blessing. It is not devious. It is to come and receive salvation blessing. And the most noteworthy of which is the pardoning of our sin through Jesus, who was crucified for our sin. And then gathered into a body called the church, the well-loved sons and daughters of God. Lastly, then, I'll close on the determination of these disciples. What did these disciples make of Jesus' invitation and his offer of education? To Lucatus in the text, the moment has come in which these disciples have to make that decision for themselves. Would they follow Jesus? Or would they follow some other voice, some other personality? And we see their decision in verses 20 and 22. Jesus, having given the two invitations, we read, immediately they left their nets and followed him. Again, immediately, they left the boat and their father and followed him. My closing question to you is simply this. Has this Jesus won your confidence that he is worth following? And that he is also worth following intentionally? That is my question to you. Has Jesus won your confidence that he is worth following and that he is worth following intentionally?